I don't know what we talked about. I mean, I have no idea of where we were or what we talked about. And of course, unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to review this that you...
Well, we had been talking about some of your technical work, and I wanted to continue going through some of that.
Mm-hmm. Here, was this at Poly or... Oh, say, by the way, how is this deal related to Chalk? Thackeray is listed as editor of that.
Oh.
Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Well, what it amounts to is contemporary citations and every... every week there's this thing which has the same address as Chalk, I believe. Get down a little publication. I don't know whether I told you my doctoral thesis went through 17 editions before it was bound.
Oh, my goodness.
And,
well, let me just introduce the tape. This is Jim Boning of the Center for History of Chemistry. I'm speaking with Dr. Donald Offner in his office at Brooklyn Poly, I'm sorry, Polytechnic University, on January 15th, 1987. Dr. Offner, the last time we were discussing your some of your technical work, and I wanted to continue with that this afternoon. Specifically, I wanted to start with something that has the acronym PROST, Pressure Recycling Oxidation Sewage Treatment, which uses enzymes. And could you tell me something about how you got into that work?
That is a very interesting to me development, but like three or four other developments that I have spent a lot of time, effort, and money on, it never has had a market outlet. I don't know whether this is worthwhile including, because there's never been any commercialization of that. The basic idea, in a sentence or so, is the fact that the fermentation of sewage can be taken, it can be expedited under pressure, and this pressure system reduces very considerably the enormous tankage which is otherwise involved in the usual civil engineering approach to the sewage treatment operation. It makes it more of a chemical engineering operation rather than the huge tankages and open operations always associated with the civil engineering operations in sewage treatment. By highly intensifying the supply of oxygen in small bubbles, and particularly under pressure, and with a recycling operation, the size of the necessary tankage can be reduced to 1/5 to 1/10 the size normally used. Variations of this process have been used, probably bordering on or within the scope of the patents which I have secured, and these involve deep pit fermentations up to thousands of feet, wells which depend on their high pressure and therefore the more rapid aerobic oxidation or aerobic fermentation by the hydrostatic head. These have been used in Sweden and England. The comparable system above ground has also been used in Germany in very large installations, and it would be an interesting question patent-wise to investigate the relations of these several systems. So far, I've never been successful in developing a user of the process as I would envisage it, but it is a successful idea with some variations which have been used in other countries of the world.
How did you get started in that area, and when did you?
Like many other things, everything's a synthesis or a symbiosis of other people's work and reading how somebody is thinking along some lines, and then one can think, well, if I were doing it, I would do it a little differently. So in many cases, in my own organization of thoughts and developments, it has been in a field in which I was relatively unfamiliar, but which on studying somebody else's process, I could see that with the knowledge which I had in some related field, an improvement could be made, the operation or process could be done in a different way, and the extra disciplinary approach is so often combined with a certain motivation, often will result in, of course, new inventions, as is best shown by any patent application, which in being prosecuted is noted by the patent examiner to have had from 1 to 100 predecessor ideas very close to, and of course in some cases entirely covering the idea which the inventor himself is proposing.
You said it's been licensed, or you?
Yes, it was licensed in Japan. Unfortunately, the company that licensed it was a chemical company, and finally decided after finding that it would work in their particular waste materials, they decided that they could go out and buy a sewage treatment plant from somebody commercially rather than carrying on the necessary development work to perfect this, and they had no desire really to get into the sewage treatment business. So while they did hold it up for a while, a tentative arrangement, it never was profitable to them to carry it out merely for their own use, and they didn't want to go into business.
Is there any reason why it was not taken on in this country?
Yes, the reason was it would require time and effort to develop, and I never gave the necessary time and effort to it. I still think it's good.
One of the other areas that I wanted to discuss with you was an area in which you have patents, I think, around about 10 years ago, wet combustion of organic wastes. Now, am I correct in saying that this has been more successful commercially than...
This process I have licensed, and license fees have been paid for many years. By the principal people in this business in the world, the Zimpro is the name. Stop just a moment. Is a system of wet oxidation of organic material. It may be used for everything from the partial oxidation of paper waste liquors to make fine chemicals to the oxidation of spent or overage explosives as a means of their destruction. By far the largest use, however, has been in sewage treatment, whereby sewage is oxidized, and therefore the biological oxygen demand is supplied under pressure in the liquid phase. Yes? I don't know why that number. What did I say the last word?
Well, you just were working into its application in sewage treatment.
Yes. I first ran into it in 1948, that is, this system, in Sweden, where I had licensed the world's oldest corporation to use a patent which I had developed for the production of wallboard. The world's oldest corporation is the Stora Kopparberg Bergslags Aktiebolaget, which is of indefinite age. Nobody knows, except that back in 1270, there's a record that they sold a large block of their stock. Very interesting, because that company, up through the Revolutionary War times, our Revolutionary War, supplied most of the copper in the European world. Since then, they've gone into wood and other operations, wood products in Sweden and pulp and paper, and it was in that sense that I had licensed this group of patents, which I had developed for the making of wallboard, similar to that of the Masonite process, but using waste materials rather than whole logs. My friend Dr. Cederquist, the director of development, had developed this for the Stora Kopparberg, had developed this process as a means of neutralizing, or rather eliminating, the waste materials in pulping liquors. He was also mainly concerned with how to develop the uses of peat in Sweden. Sweden has no petroleum, no gas, and practically no coal, but it does have large amounts of peat. Peat may have 90 to 95% water, and it's a slimy, nasty material to work with. Period. Carl Cederquist found that by heating this to about 200 degrees centigrade, the peat would lose its colloidal properties, which makes it impossible to separate the water from the solids ordinarily, and the material then may be centrifuged to give probably 45 to 55% solids and an aqueous liquid. This system was developed by Cedarquist. He said he couldn't get a United States patent because the patent office in Washington could not understand his claims that by putting this in a tank and heating it to 200 degrees and then blowing in some oxygen or in the form of air, he could partially combust the peat material and supply the necessary heat. He had already found it was impossible to heat the peat, even though it was 10% or more water, because of the slimy colloidal material stuck to any heat transfer surface. So Cedarquist's contribution was the idea of heating it in situ in the aqueous medium, 80-90% water, and oxidizing and supplying, therefore, the heat necessary to raise to 200 degrees. The patent office in Washington could not agree that this was a possibility. Cedarquist asked me would I go down and talk it over with him, which I did, and in a due time he got his patents, because I could testify to the patent examiner that this was an actual case. Shortly thereafter, and this was now about 1950, I met another man by the name of Zimmerman, Dr. Zimmerman, who was quite an organic chemist and was interested in oxidizing pulping liquors to make vanillin or coumarin for its uses. He had tried to oxidize, or did oxidize, with other oxidizing agent, but found that, of course, the cheapest method was merely to blow in oxygen or air into the liquors when they were at this higher temperature, or heated up to that temperature by the partial oxidation. The odd thing was that Zimmerman and Cedarquist got their patents separately and obviously not infringing on each other at the same time in about 1951. I had met Zimmerman, who was a member of the Chemist Club, although he lived out in Wisconsin. The interesting thing was that the Sterling Drug Company, a maker of fine chemicals, thought this was an interesting process that might be used not only for the making of vanillin or similar materials, but also for other uses as a tool in synthetic organic chemistry. And so they bought the process, and they established a company which was called Zimpro, Z-I-M-P-R-O, named, of course, after Zimmerman. The contribution which I made was to several tools, accessories of the heat and cooling medium, or rather equipment, for use with such, and also a system for doing it on a smaller scale by a batch operation, a semi-batch operation, instead of the continuous process which both Zimmerman and Cedarquist had envisaged. This idea and a half a dozen patents were then licensed to Zimpro, who paid me royalties for them. Actually, they never used these processes. They were satisfied with their own, but they did not want some of their possible competitors who were showing up to have the advantage of my processes, and so these patents were merely put on the shelf, although they did have continued to pay the royalties. I also licensed to Zimpro a modification of this process wherein the wet organic material, after it had been stabilized and losing its colloidal properties, could then be subjected to gasification under certain conditions to make syngas, which would be used in any one of the numerous places where syngas is used for high volume production of chemicals.
While your ideas on this began to go back to the 40s, are your patents more recent?
The latter last patent and the one which Zimpro then reproduced on an aluminum plate was compliments to me for my 80th birthday. It was much more recent, only about 5 years ago, and that is the one on the production of syngas as a downstream product of the wet oxidation process. The basic process of the wet air oxidation is indeed a very interesting and valuable process, and Zimpro have built some 200 plants throughout the world, mainly for the disposal of waste. And as far as I know, none for the synthetic chemical aspect, which Sterling Drug had originally thought worthwhile, and for which reason Sterling Drug had bought the Zimpro patents, technology, know-how, and organization. Another interesting thing from the history of chemical industry, Sterling Drug only in 1985, late, decided that this was not for them because it was waste disposal was not in their field of small volume, high cost medicinals, etc. And they Sterling sold Zimpro to, of all groups, the Michigan University, I forget the name exactly, it's a metallurgical university up in the northern peninsula of Michigan.
Michigan Tech,
it's called. It has a longer name. And oddly enough, a research corporation of Michigan Tech is the present owner and operator of this corporation, which does, I suppose, $100 million of business a year. And certainly must be profitable. It is a very high-class, high-capable engineering organization of high capabilities.
The next area that I wanted to cover was pipeline heating. You had, again, done a number of things.
This also is out of my field, in which pipeline heating is also out of my field, because it depends on a phenomenon of electrical technology. The inductive heating of a steel surface or pipe by a alternating current passing through a conductor relatively close. Here I developed because I had been asked to review patents of a corporation that I worked with on other matters involving their use of this so-called skin effect of electrical heating. The point was that even though I'm not an electrical engineer, I recognized that the patented processes they had for utilizing this so-called skin effect of inductive heating would not sustain a serious competition if three or four in very elementary improvements were made. Unfortunately, the corporation involved said, or the inventor, with the typical arrogance of inventors, parenthesis, I know because I'm one, parenthesis, refused to take the suggestions and told me in substance, if what you have is something that's worthwhile, take it yourself and do what you want to with it. The result was that I did find other people to license the patent to, and they paid me royalties on 100 installations or so over a period of many years, until indeed the patent expired. Other aspects of this patent or this invention and of subsequent patents which I got, but which I have never taken the time or energy to develop, would include the prevention of ice formation on cables of bridges, like suspension bridges, or particularly of cables of high tension lines, which sometimes break when sleet forms on them and the weight of the accumulated ice breaks the cable. Another aspect of the same patents, of the same patented inventions, includes the de-icing of rails of third rails in those places where a sleet formation occurs and prevents the brushes against the third rail giving contact after the shutdown of the train at a intermediate at a station, and sometimes within a matter of 3 or 4 minutes, the ice formation will prevent the starting of the train due to the lack of contact. Other applications are also envisaged, such as the reduction by 50% of the amount of copper that is required for electrical conductivity in such low power usages, domestic wiring, and so on. These ideas have been demonstrated, but again, I have never had the time or energy to develop them.